Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Last live show of the week. Always fun. And it's a good one today because we've been talking about, and honestly, it's kind of a bad one. I don't want to talk about this subject. I don't want to be in this position that we're in right now to have to talk about the fact that Senate Bill 5599 is going to be law in Washington state. And on top of that, you have actual news agencies, and if you're listening on the podcast, I'm going to use air quotes for one of those for sure, who are claiming to fact check the claims that have been all over social media about Senate Bill 5599, but not even the fact checkers are accurate on it. And it's really, it's not surprising, but it's disappointing to see that we can't just have a reasonable conversation about the implications of this bill, what it means for parental rights, without one side screaming right-wing misinformation. I realize that some of you might disagree, but I do not consider myself right-wing. I suppose in the grand scheme of the political makeup of Seattle, you would consider me maybe right-wing, which any moderate in Seattle is deemed right-wing, so be it. But we'll go over in a moment the fact-checking done on right-wing claims over Senate Bill 5599, and you know, it's going to boil down to me telling you that you just got to read the bill yourself, because apparently you can't trust the media to give you accurate information on anything anymore. So you just have to go right to the source. Also coming up, a slew of mayors have penned a letter begging state lawmakers to do something meaningful about the drug crisis, not to tie their hands on the drug crisis. And we're really getting down there on what exactly state lawmakers are going to do to try to deal with the open, blatant drug use that's happening on our streets, the increase in overdoses that are playing out in our downtowns and in our business districts. And you have some cities that are just desperate. Cities that have the political will to do what needs to be done, but are worried about being hamstrung by state lawmakers who want to just legalize substance abuse and think that that won't have negative implications on our community. It's wild to me. Also, we'll have some fun later on. My sister's back for Florida Report. She's out of the ICU. We talked on the show the other day about how she wasn't on Florida Report last week because she went to the ICU for breathing issues. But she's feeling better, still sounds a little weak. But she's joining us to talk about how some of the things happening in Florida right now around parental rights are the absolute antithesis of what's going on in Washington state. And then later on, man, if you go to Twitter today, full on, and I'll bring you in this, Nicole. Hello, Nicole.
Hi, Brandy.
Hi. Full-on meltdown of the formerly verified Twitter users.
It's fun to watch people meltdown.
But the thing is that
over something so silly.
It's the worst kind of meltdown because they want to act like they're really okay and totally cool with losing their blue check mark, but you know that they're totally not.
Ding their ego.
Oh, their egos are suffering. Meanwhile, I paid for Twitter Blue. I was like, you know what? It's a service for me. Twitter is important to my business. It has some benefits that are good, like I can post longer videos. I don't have to fit everything into 2 minutes and 20 seconds. So yeah, I find $8 worth of value in Twitter for my business every month.
Absolutely. And I think that's what people are missing, is that there's more than just a check mark that you're getting. You're getting these other perks, right?
So right.
Not everybody knows that.
And we'll talk about this insanity check at the end of the show, mm-hmm. but it all boils down to them not wanting to give Elon Musk $8.
Heaven forbid.
It's like, then don't, but
it's
don't
a
have a meltdown then if you don't mm-hmm. want the blue check mark, which people just feel like they've somehow earned. It's very strange. I got the blue check mark because I work for a news entity, and everyone who worked for that news entity got a blue check mark, so people didn't impersonate you. And so the public knew, like, hey, this is coming from a verified source of information.
Right. It was hard to get. I tried to get one for Dory for a long time. No one would give it to us.
Elon would have given it to Dory.
He would have.
For $8 a month.
I think so. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, welcome to the show. Let's talk about Senate Bill 5599. If you're new to the show, I'll catch you up briefly. It is a bill that is now going to become law in Washington that would essentially expand the reasons where if a kid runs away from home and they go to a shelter. Right now, under the law, in most instances, that shelter would have to contact your parents and say, hey, we've got Johnny, he's at the shelter. Right now, under the law, there are certain exemptions for that. For instance, in cases of physical abuse, if a child is fleeing an abusive household, then yeah, the shelter isn't required to say, hey, come get your kid and send them back to the abuse. That makes a lot of sense. But what Senate Bill 5599 does is it expands the circumstances under which a shelter would not have to contact your parents to let them know that you've run away from from home. And that would include if the child shows up and they say, I am seeking protected health care. So that could be gender affirming care. It could be reproductive health care that's already protected under Washington state law. So my primary issue with this bill has been not the transgender debate. That's a whole separate conversation that I'm more than happy to have that we've talked about on the show. But it's about parental rights. And it's about the state essentially saying with this bill that physical abuse is just as good a justification than a parent who has concerns about their child seeking gender care. Those two things are now on the same plane and give these shelters a right not to call you if your child runs away from home. I have an issue with comparing physical abuse to a parent who has issues with or wants a say in the type of medical care that their child is going to receive around gender issues or reproductive care. So that's what this is about. This is a bill that demands nuance. This is a bill that demands and has demanded throughout the entirety of the debate, reasoned conversation about the implications of it. But there is one segment, and that is the people who are pushing for it, who want to label any sort of pushback against Senate Bill 5599 as right-wing misinformation, as anti-transgender, as hateful. And I have a problem with that too. I don't consider myself right-wing. I don't have an issue with transgender individuals, although I think there is a worthy conversation to have about what kind of procedures someone under the age of 18 should get. But to me, it boils down to parental rights. But the left that's supporting this doesn't want to have that conversation because they know that a parental rights conversation will cross party lines. Because when it comes to a parent protecting their kid, political affiliation goes out the window. So they don't want to have that conversation. So they instead focus on, if you're opposed to this bill, you hate transgender people, you hate transgender kids, you want transgender kids to kill themselves, and you're just an awful right-wing troll. And we saw that yesterday when this finally passed from the bill's architect, Washington State Senator Marco Elias, who took to Twitter. And again, it's not about him celebrating and defending his bill. It's really about Senator Marco Elias suggesting that, again, pushback to the bill is right wing. He said, Senate Bill 5599 is officially heading to the governor's desk for his signature. This bill has been the subject of widespread misinformation, but it is simply about protecting youth in crises and making sure they have access to safe, stable shelter, because who would not want that? And you might note there at the bottom of his tweet, he says, read more below. So you might be wondering, well, what does he want me to read? What institution of journalism is he putting out there on his Twitter thread for people to read about the real facts behind Senate Bill 5599? Well, the institution of journalism that he's linking to is none other than The Stranger, Seattle's alt-weekly newspaper far-left rag that is genuinely obsessed with me, and I feel like they should actually have me on their payroll because they simply write about me so much. And they write, and again, they hold this up as a fact check. It's titled, No, Washington Did Not Just Pass a Law Allowing the State to Kidnap and Transgenderfy Children. And in it, they write, conservative figures, politicians and far-right groups such as Conservative Ladies of Washington, D-trans activist Ollie London, Washington Representative Leonard Christian, Representative Jim Walsh, and Brandi Cruz say Senate Bill 5599 infringes on parental rights. Yes, I have said that, and I firmly believe, and I don't know how, if you read the bill, you can argue that it infringes on parental rights. The Stranger goes on to say, they assert that the state of Washington is now free to kidnap, disappear, and transgenderfy children without the knowledge or consent of their loving parents, who would be left confused, heartbroken, and financially responsible for any and all costs. And I will say about that quote, I have never argued that the state of Washington will kidnap and disappear your kids. I have never argued that the state of Washington will transgenderfy your kids. So, Nicole, if you want to stash that away, because that actually might be the basis for a lawsuit, because I've never claimed any of those things. Now, I have claimed that Senate Bill 5599 does amount to government-sanctioned kidnapping of your kids. And no, I haven't said that the state of Washington is going to come in and kidnap your kids. But when you don't know where your child is and the state of Washington has given an outside entity the legal authority to hide your child's location from you, yes, I do believe that amounts to government-sanctioned kidnapping of your kids. But no, I've never said that the state of Washington is going to transgendify your children. And so I really hope the stranger, we should ask them for a retraction on that, because I've never had that argument at all.
I also want them to add a podcast host or undivided host, because everybody else...
Give us some attention.
Yeah, everybody else gets a, this is who this is, before their name. Did you notice that?
The stranger writes about me so often.
Yeah, you're like Madonna.
That, yeah, I think that they just, and now all their readers know, right?
Can just be Brandy.
Now, before I completely destroy the stranger's article, as if anyone thinks it actually needs to be destroyed, I think the fact that the stranger wrote it is just, I think that just speaks for itself, that it's probably going to be inaccurate or deeply, deeply flawed, which it is. And I've just pointed to one example of it being inaccurate. But I thought it was, I had to read this tweet from Jim Walsh, which actually speaks to the title of today's episode. The title of today's episode is Lumped In With the Riffraff. And that's because Representative Jim Walsh sent out a tweet about this, and he felt bad for me. He said, the fourth best alt-weekly in Seattle does what it does, spin desperately, disparage conservatives, and then quote a bunch of extreme left activists, also poor Brandy Cruz, lumped in with the riffraff. Look, I'm happy to be lumped in with anyone who wants to question Senate Bill 5599, who wants to question it on its merits, on the necessity of it, and on, yes, the fact that it is an affront to parental rights. Again, I have not in any setting argued or made this an argument about transgender issues. I go back to the fact that Democrats want to make it about right-wing hating trans, and I'm not saying that the other people in that there that are mentioned in this article haven't. I don't know the extent of what they've tweeted out about it. But personally, for me, I have not made this an issue of transgender surgeries, transgender care, transgender rights in the slightest. In fact, I have made a concerted effort to do the opposite of that and to make it an issue over and over of parental rights. Again, we can have a separate conversation, and we've had it on the podcast, about, you know, my view on gender-affirming care, as they call it, is that parents have a right to be involved. That's it. Is that just like I'm not going to tell a parent that they should be cut out of decision-making in their child's life, that's kind of my position on this, is that I'm for parental rights, and so I want parents to have a say in anything that their child might do, and that includes issues related to gender-affirming care. So again, the stranger is just inaccurate when it lumps me in on that. Now, I'm going to get to some of the claims that the stranger makes in this article, but I will just note that the stranger is not the only, and I won't even call them a news entity. It's kind of like a blog with an opinion, hard opinion slant. Como News, man, Como, I was really disappointed to see Como News take the bait on this and really pick up the Democratic talking points on this being sort of a far-right misinformation campaign where, you know, information is being distorted. In a Como article, it says, viral posts falsely claimed the bill would result in children being legally taken from their parents if they did not consent to their child's gender transition. Now, look, this is a matter of semantics. What people are saying, and look, I haven't seen every single tweet on the internet. Might there be some, you know, off the wall claims that you're going to legally lose your parental rights? Sure. But this is about not knowing and not being told where your child is. And I'm sorry, if my kid is somewhere sanctioned by the state and I'm not allowed to know their location, then yeah, my parental rights have been, there's an affront there to my my parental rights. My rights have been infringed. And so you can claim that that's not legally taking kids from their parents, but you're failing to see the nuance in the conversation. And you just want to say, oh, that's false, as opposed to having a nuanced conversation about what the bill actually does and what the effect of the bill can be on a parent who's left not knowing where their child is when the state knows where your child is. So back to that stranger article. And I will just say that the stranger, again, fails. They don't want to have a nuanced conversation about Senate Bill 5599. But also, their fact check is just factually inaccurate. And it sort of, it relies on picking and choosing their words carefully to try to make a point. So let me read an example. In one paragraph of the Stranger article, it says, the changes are simple. A shelter can now notify the Washington Department of Child, Youth, and Families before the parents of the young people in these cases, which increases the state's involvement with young people. They say that like it's a good thing. That's kind of the problem. It does not eliminate requirements to notify parents, and it is specifically intended to reunify children with their families. Okay. The stranger says it does not eliminate requirements to notify parents. Again, no one is claiming that parents aren't going to be notified. What we're saying and what the bill says is that parents are not going to be told where their child is. If you're a parent and your child has gone missing, and you get a call from the Department of Child, Youth, and Families, and you say, hey, your child is at a shelter, does that help? Sure. But as a parent, they're still not going to tell you, and they're not mandated under this law to tell you what shelter that is, where your child might be. And that is still immensely, immensely problematic. Now, here's what I'll say about what I think you should do. And I'm going to go through some of this. At this point, with this much back and forth, finger pointing, labels of misinformation that aren't really misinformation, an inability from the media to have a nuanced conversation about the implications of Senate Bill 5599, at this point, my advice to you would be just to go read the bill. The bill is 10 pages long. It's truly not that long. And with so much conflicting information from politicians, from the media, podcast hosts, just go read the bill. That is the surest way for you to get directly to the source and to formulate your own interpretation of what the intent of the bill is and what the implications of the bill are. But again, I'll read just some passages from it. And I'll even reference the page number so that you, when you go to the bill, can read this for yourself. So again, one of the arguments here is that this isn't hiding kids from their parents. Under the law right now, if your child shows up for a bevy of reasons to a shelter, the shelter has to call your parents. But what the law is doing is it's carving out exceptions. One of them being if your child shows up to seek protected health care, like gender care, for instance, or reproductive care. So the bill says, this is page 2, if there are compelling reasons not to notify the parent, the shelter or organization must instead notify the department, and they're referring to the Department of Children and Family Services. Compelling reasons. The law expands the definition of compelling reasons. It says compelling reasons include, this is now page 3, but are not limited to, when a minor is seeking or receiving protected health care services. It says protected health care services means gender-affirming treatment as defined under the law and reproductive health care services as defined under existing law. So again, that's very clear. If there are compelling reasons not to notify the parent, I've just told you what the law says that those compelling reasons can be, then the shelter must instead notify the state, the Department of Children and Family Services. So again, someone's going to be notified. At this point, it is still not the parent. It is still not the parent who's going to be notified. So what then is the responsibility of the Department of Children and Family Services at that point, that they've gotten the call from a shelter saying, hey, there's a compelling reason, they're here to seek gender-affirming care under the law, then we're not calling the parents, we're calling you, so now we're calling you. So what then does the department have to do? Again, under the bill, this is page 3. It says, when the department receives a report under subsection 1 of this section for a minor who is seeking or receiving protected healthcare services, it shall offer to make referrals on behalf of the minor for appropriate behavioral health services and offer services designed to resolve the conflict and accomplish a reunification of the family. Okay. So nowhere in there does it require there to be a movement toward reunification. It simply says that the state will offer services designed to hopefully resolve the conflict. Now, a child who ran away from home, how willing do you think that child is going to be to accept those services that will result in reunification with their family? Again, you're leaving the ball in the court of that child to decide, do they want to be reunified with their parent? And that is part of the problem. It also says that when the department receives a report under subsection 1 of this section, it shall make a good faith attempt to notify the parent that a report has been received and offer services designed to resolve the conflict and accomplish a reunification of the family. It shall make a good faith attempt to notify the parent. What is a good faith attempt? What is a, it doesn't define it. What is a good faith attempt to notify a parent? You make one phone call, if they don't answer, that's it. And nowhere in this bill, nowhere in this bill does it say that the state, when they receive a report of a child showing up at a shelter to seek protected health care, nowhere in the bill does it say the state has to notify the parent of the child's location. Nowhere in the bill, because it's not a requirement of the bill. And that is the crux of the issue. The vast majority of the pushback over this has been the state knowing where your child is and refusing to tell you and not giving you your child's location. That's it. So any of these fact checks that want to take issue with that are simply false. Nowhere in the bill, 10 pages. Again, I encourage you to read it yourself. Don't trust me. Don't trust Cuomo. Don't trust the stranger. For the love of God, don't trust Senator Marco Elias. Trust your own instincts and your own intelligence, and please go read all 10 pages of Senate Bill 5599. And genuinely, I feel bad for the public. I feel bad for the public, the amount of conflicting information there has been on this bill, in the fact that you can no longer trust people who claim to be fact-checking information for you. I feel bad that the public doesn't have that anymore, and that you have to go read 10 pages of the bill to know what's going on with your family, what could happen with your kids, what your rights are as a parent. But that is the sad state of things, and that's where it's come down to. So I encourage you to read the bill for yourself. Make your own determination. And also don't feed into the fear-mongering that if you don't agree with this bill, you're a bad parent, you're an abusive parent, you're right-wing, you're a tool of right-wing misinformation, you're anti-transgender. You know who you are. Read the bill, decide how you feel about it, and ignore any sort of labels that someone like Senator Marco Elias or the folks at The Stranger want to assign to you. And The Stranger, we will be reaching out for a correction and a retraction. And if we don't get one, then we'll decide where to go from there. How does that sound? Okay. Other news in Olympia. I just want to mention this quickly. We are expecting the governor to sign, if he hasn't already, while I've been ranting about Senate Bill 5599, the ban on so-called assault weapons. And remember, once his pen hits paper on that, it is law. Now, that doesn't mean that your existing weapons that will be banned moving forward get taken from you, at least not yet. I'm sure that that's in the works at some point. You get to keep them, you're grandfathered in, but you will never be able to purchase another one in Washington State. One of the other things that we'll be monitoring is what it means for those of you who might have gone out to try to purchase one and are currently in a waiting period. So let's say you went to a gun shop, you bought an AR-15 in anticipation of the ban, you're currently going through the background check, it hasn't been finished yet, and then the governor signs pen to paper today. I think there is still some confusion and gray area about whether that weapon can be delivered to you or whether you're going to get a refund for that weapon from the dealer and not get it. I wish we had a hard and fast answer for you on that, but even we had Wade from Wade's East Side Guns on the other day, and he said that they were trying to figure out that out, that he thinks that if you've passed the background check and you're just waiting to pick it up, that you can still get it. But if you haven't passed the background check period yet, that you're not going to be able to take possession of that firearm. So as all of that shakes out, we'll let you know. I know there are some people who are curious. I'll just point to Bob Ferguson's celebratory tweet on this. And again, he's not lying when he says he's kind of the brains behind the assault weapon ban. He tweeted out yesterday, in 2016, I introduced legislation to combat mass shootings by banning the sale of AR-15s and other military-style assault weapons. Today, the bill passed. Assault weapons sales will soon be banned in Washington. Thank you to everyone who helped make our community safer. And this will be a drumbeat from the Attorney General during his campaign for governor, which I've got to imagine is going to come soon. Because the momentum that I think he feels like is going to come off that ban. I would imagine he's going to try to take advantage of that. But before he announces his campaign for governor, I would assume he's going to wait for the current governor to announce he's not going to run again, which I don't know what's taking Jay Inslee so long to do that. Maybe after the legislative session wraps up, he's going to announce that. I think that would probably make a lot of sense. So we'll wait for the timing and all of that. One more story here at the top that I want to dig into. Dozens of mayors have signed onto a letter, essentially begging state legislators before the session is done to do something meaningful to help them combat the drug crisis. You know, there's this whole conversation around fixing the Blake decision, which is the Washington State Supreme Court decision that nullified our state's felony drug possession statute. So right now, the legislature is trying to decide, okay, how do we want to deal with the Blake decision? And instead of just making a simple fix to the law, they literally could have added one word and then kept it a felony. You have a segment of the Democratic Party that wants essentially de facto legalization of drug possession because they don't think it should be vilified or criminalized. And so you had these two, what I thought were really great bipartisan solutions to Blake at the beginning of the session, and they've just gotten watered down, and they're, you know, to me, they're not meaningful enough to make a difference at this point. And so one of the things I've said is if they're not willing to improve this bill, the bill that's still alive, then I think the bill should be killed if Republicans have that power and there's some Democratic detractors. And then it leaves the issue to cities. And then cities and other localities can come up with their own laws around what to do when someone is possessing illegal drugs. And I think that's a much better situation for cities that have common sense mayors that actually want to do something meaningful. I think that's a better solution. So anyway, late yesterday, a number of mayors sent out a letter to lawmakers, again, just urging them to do something. And I just want to read, I'm going to read all of them, the mayors that signed on to this. The mayor of Spokane, Spokane Valley, Cheney, Liberty Lake, Medical Lake, Millwood, Colville, Chowila, Everett, Richland, Pasco, Colfax, Marysville, Lake Stevens, Sultan, Kent, Puyallup, Lakewood, Auburn, Renton, Gig Harbor, Ording, Milton, Ruston, Yakima, Kennewick, Bonnie Lake, and Sumner. Mayors of all those cities urging elected leaders to do something. They wrote, as local governments, public safety is our number one job, and we are asking for help from the state legislature to restore tough boundaries, maintain local control, and protect our communities. We, the undersigned mayors, have become increasingly concerned with the changes made by the House to Senate Bill 5536. The changes represent a step back in accountability and make it more difficult for local governments to keep our communities safe. We recognize substance use disorder is a medical issue and that substance use disorder treatment and services are necessary. We appreciate that the legislature has taken action to approve crisis response facilities and has allocated funding to construct those facilities to ensure that treatment and services are available. However, even with available facilities, substance use disorder impairs individual decision-making ability, which prevents many from entering necessary treatment and services without being adequately compelled. Given that, any final version of Senate Bill 5536 needs to ensure that the final bill enacted encourages individuals to obtain necessary treatment, holds individuals accountable, and directs the court to implement a mandatory penalty that is often necessary for the individual to enter and complete treatment. Again, so you have the mayors of all those cities I just outlined, west side of the state, east side of the state, central Washington, saying, look, we understand that substance abuse is a medical issue. We're not saying we don't want people to get treatment. But what we are saying is sometimes they have to be adequately compelled to get treatment. And sometimes being adequately compelled means facing jail time. Time to sober up, enough to make a good decision about what to do with their lives moving forward. And again, this is common sense. This is common sense, and it's not political, in my opinion. This letter doesn't favor any one political party. It's not about pushing a political agenda. It's about pushing common sense and saying, we want these people to get better. Them getting better is a societal good. They can contribute to society in a meaningful way instead of tearing society down through all the things that sometimes addicts do to support their behavior and their addiction. All these cities want is to see a bill passed through the legislature in Olympia that will better lead to outcomes that will end addiction. That's all they want. That's not controversial. And so again, I hope that there are some last minute improvements to this particular bill, Senate Bill 5536. And if there's not, I really hope that no bill passes at all. Because then at least you can have mayors like these who have a lick of common sense that can institute actual penalties that will make a difference. And the number of cities, by the way, doing that for themselves is on the rise. You know, we talked about the city of Bellingham. Like, Progressive Central said, yeah, we need to pass a municipal code that says that it's against the law to use drugs in public. There have been some other cities in Snohomish County, in South King County that have done that. And now Lakewood, the city of Lakewood just passed its own ordinance saying that if police encounter someone using, and this is according to Como, using an illegal controlled substance in a public space, the person could be charged with a gross misdemeanor, which is punishable up to 364 days in jail and up to a $5,000 fine. So the city of Lakewood is saying, look, we got to do something for ourselves because the state might not do anything. But here's a scary thing. If the state passes some watered down version of a Blake fix, then it has a preemption in it, a local preemption, which means all these laws that cities like Bellingham and now Lakewood have passed would be meaningless. And that's a really scary proposition if the state law doesn't mean anything at all. So something to keep your eye on now that, you know, the assault weapon ban is a done deal, soon to be Senate Bill 5599 is soon to be a done deal. The Blake issue is something that's still lingering and deserves urgent attention. And I'm grateful for these mayors for coming together to say so. All right, before we move on to our segment Unbelievable, I want to tell you about our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. If you are considering selling your home, maybe you want to leave the craziness that is Washington State, or you just need to get a little further away from Seattle, and you're thinking, gosh, is now the right time to sell my house? The market's been up and down. Visit sellwithwes.com. Reach out to Wes Jones and just ask him. Tell him, you know, the circumstances under which you're trying to sell your home, where you're trying to move. He did tell me that he thinks there's a window of opportunity right now where people are getting multiple offers, where you might even get cash offers again. So he can give you some good advice. And also, if you do decide to pull the trigger and put your home on the market, Wes Jones and Associates has a wonderful marketing strategy. They'll get your home listed locally, even internationally, to get as many eyeballs on it as possible. They've been doing this for a really long time. So we're excited to add sellwithwes.com to the show as a sponsor. Wes Jones is great, can offer some great advice on whether it's time to sell your home, whether you should wait a little bit, but he'll give you the honest truth. And again, if you do decide to list, him and his team have a great system to get you the best possible offer. All right. I feel bad because for 2 days in a row, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal has been featured in our segment Unbelievable, but she just keeps saying unbelievable things. So let's get to it. Whoop. All right, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal was on the House floor talking about immigrants and their value to society. And I think that there is this real urge from progressives to paint Republicans as just absolutely hating immigrants. Hate them. When the vast majority of Republicans, the only issue they take with immigration is illegal immigration, is what's happening at the southern border, which again is a very reasonable concern to have about thousands of people just flooding across the southern border and not knowing where they go when there is a path toward legal citizenship and opportunities to come work in the United States while you're waiting on perhaps legal citizenship. And so, you know, there's this conflation that if you have an issue with illegal immigration, then you just hate immigrants. And it's kind of what Congresswoman Jayapal was saying, but in doing so, she really exposed the fact that she must not think very much of the immigrant community at all. Listen.
This country needs immigrants to survive. Immigrants pick the food we eat, rebuild our communities after climate disasters, help construct our infrastructure, power our small business economy, clean our homes, and look after the most precious in our families.
Huh. What was that? Can you replay just that little last part there?
Clean our homes.
Huh. You know, Congresswoman, you should know this better than anyone, that immigrants also do more than clean our homes. They also happen to be members of Congress, like yourself, an immigrant to this country, who now is one of the most influential members of the U.S. Congress. And so I find it very interesting that someone who wants to suggest that Republicans think little of immigrants, don't want immigrants in our country, think immigrants are just here to steal our jobs and provide nothing else of substance to the United States. I find it interesting that someone like you would rattle off a list of things that immigrants do that some would consider menial labor, and that you wouldn't acknowledge that immigrants contribute to the country in a variety of ways. Yes, they play important roles when it comes to agriculture. They play important roles when it comes to hourly jobs that keep our economy moving and thriving, but they can also do a lot of other things, as you should know very well. And the reason why I honed in to that soundbite from the Congresswoman is it actually sounded very, very familiar. And I couldn't help but remember a very similar sentiment being aired on The View.
If you kick every Latino out of this country, then who is going to be cleaning your toilet, Donald Trump?
Oh, that's not.
In the sense that, no. You know what I mean? Like, what I'm saying
that there's more jobs to be
in LA, they always,
but they don't. Latinos are not only the only people.
Yeah, kind of the same vibe there. And she was absolutely destroyed, had to come out and apologize for saying that. And you can understand why. It's deeply offensive to suggest that the only thing Latinos are good for is cleaning Donald Trump's toilet. And so I go back to what Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal said, and it's a little unbelievable to me that there isn't more pushback over that, because you can absolutely guarantee that if a Republican had taken to the floor of the House and said the exact same thing about the role of immigrants in our communities and in our country, that they would have had a much stronger pushback. But apparently, since it is a congresswoman who also happens to be an immigrant herself, then she can get away with it. Again, frankly, unbelievable. All right, methodworks.com is one of our newest sponsors to the podcast, and I hope that some of you have taken advantage of the offer that they're giving undivided viewers and listeners. So MethodWorks is a one-stop shop for all your tech needs as a business, whether you've got 5 employees or 50 employees. They can help you with getting your stuff over to the cloud, setting your employees up with computers, and do not underestimate, as a business, big or small, the importance of security and protecting yourself from a data breach. This is something that Mark Harmsworth, who owns MethodWorks, had to explain to me, that one data breach can wipe out a small business. You know, if you can't protect your information, your customers' information, and you have a data breach that's very serious, that could be it for you as a small business. And so MethodWorks is offering a free security review and 1 month of free security monitoring for undivided listeners and viewers. So if you're just starting a small business, if you've had a business that's been going on for some time, but you haven't pulled the trigger on getting some outside help with your tech needs, this is a tremendous opportunity, because while you get that free security review and 1 month of free security monitoring, you can also ask Mark about the other services that they offer and how you can just get all your tech needs taken care of in one place. So again, visit methodworks.com. That's methodworks.com, and tell them you heard about them on the Undivided Podcast. All right, it's Thursday. We didn't have a Florida report last Thursday because my poor sister was in the ICU for several days, but I'm happy to report that she is back for our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello, how are you?
I'm good, I'm back.
Yeah, we'll wait till the end to discuss your visit to the ICU, because I know people are curious what happened. We talked a little bit about it last week, but you're alive, yeah. And that's all that matters.
I am alive, yes.
Before we get into some stories, I saw all these tweets, including from Ron DeSantis this morning, about some emergency alert system test in Florida at like the early morning hours. Did you get it?
Yeah, both me and my boyfriend woke up at 4:45 to the loud screaming alerts on our phone. And then I looked, because it's very startling. And it was like, this is just a test, no action needed. I was like, okay, at this time in the morning. And apparently it was supposed to be run on TVs, not phones. But they didn't, you know, come out and admit that until like 4 hours later, that this was an accident, that it went to people's phones. But yeah, it ticked off a lot of local leaders, because you need people to keep those alerts on in Florida. We have a lot of very severe weather that pops up very quickly, and like flash flooding, storm surges, tornadoes, hurricanes. And if you're going to send test alerts at 4:45 in the morning, we're going to turn our alerts off pretty quick.
Can you do that? Because I don't even know, because it came through like an Amber Alert, right?
It did. It came through like an Amber Alert, the same sound and everything. But people took to social media to tell you how to turn them off today so that you don't have to deal with it. Because apparently this is a test that's supposed to roll out over the next few months. And it's and they're like, you can't be sending people these test alerts to their phone in the early hours of the morning because they are not going to keep them turned on in their phone, you know. And it's true. I mean, I was like, how do I turn this off? All groggy this morning because I thought it was going to keep happening, but it only came through once. And to be fair, I usually wake up at about 5 o'clock in the morning every day anyway, but I still would have, I would have loved my last little 15 minutes sleep today.
Ron DeSantis was livid. He tweeted, I've ordered the Florida Division of Emergency Management Director to bring swift accountability for the test of the emergency alert system in the wee hours of the morning. This was a completely inappropriate use of this system. Stay tuned. So I feel bad for whoever was responsible for that mistake because I feel like they're not going to have a job.
Yeah, I'm assuming that there's going to be some pretty heavy hands that come down on that because it is, it's an emergency alert system. It needs to be taken very seriously. Even the tests need to be taken seriously because they need people to pay attention to those things when things really do happen. I mean, just last week we had flash floods all over the city and those alerts were coming through, tornado alerts were coming through. And, you know, you need to be able to take them seriously and know that they're not just going to be random tests coming at you.
Yeah. Well, mistakes happen. So hopefully if it was a genuine mistake, somebody's not out of work for it. But moving on. So last year, there's this whole controversy over the quote unquote, don't say gay bill, which was just a name given to it by the media and opposition. But it was the Florida, what was the Parental Rights and Education Act, I think what it was really called. And the Florida Board of Education has sort of expanded the concept behind that to further protect kids from some of these teachings in school around gender or identity, for instance. Can you explain?
Yeah, so originally the bill only applied to grades K through third grade. This new thing that they just put through is actually going to expand it all the way K through 12. It basically, what they want is they don't want teachers to be responsible for teaching something that actually kind of qualifies under either mental health or just, you know, gender health in general. It's not their responsibility. They want teachers to be more of a conduit for students that if they are needing help or seeking education, maybe they can refer them to a counselor or to other sources that are more equipped to handle conversations like that and not just your average teacher in school that's supposed to be teaching history or math or something like that. So it's now all public schools, K through 12, we're not going to be teaching any of these kind of like gender conversations.
Yeah, gender identity, sexual orientation. I don't know if you have it in front of you, but you read me earlier when we were discussing before the show, this quote from, I believe it was somebody on the Board of Education. And when you read it, it just strikes me as the antithesis of what leaders and politicians in Washington state are saying when it comes to the role of people who aren't a child's parent in their lives.
Yeah, so I'm going to find it. I do have it in front of me. And it was actually DeSantis who said it last year. He said, in Florida, we not only know that parents have a right to be involved, we insist that parents have a right to be involved, which is definitely like the antithesis of what you guys are dealing with out there. And he's right. I do think that parents have a right to be involved in what's taught with their to their children, no matter what it is, whether it's math or science or anything. I think like parents should be well aware of what's being taught to their kids in school and have an opportunity to have a say in what that is. And this passed unanimously. And you had all types of PTA and parent groups that are absolutely supporting it. And, you know, people think that it's going to drive a wedge between the LGBT community and the teachers. But if the teachers are supportive of them, I don't think anything could drive a wedge between the support that a teacher or, you know, somebody like that offers a kid that needs help. You know, that's what they're there for.
Yeah, exactly. And I think some of the people like the chief complainers about efforts like that are, you know, people who would probably already on their own talk to their kids about these issues. And so I think it's a matter, like Ron DeSantis said, of parental choice and having parents be fully informed about what's going on with their kids. Now, I don't think that that means that parents should be able to dictate a math curriculum, for instance, but it is a public school. And so they should be, you know, very aware of what the curriculum is, for example. But there's just some things where I don't understand the desire to talk about it or to teach it in school when kids are there to learn. Really quickly, just because I know you love the earth, you're just such a little hippie. It's Earth Day on Saturday, and we're going to the theme of our Sundays with subscribers this week is Earth Day. We have an interview on that topic. And so I thought it'd be worth bringing up that, and I don't think Ron DeSantis gets enough credit for this, he has done some things that environmental groups really love in Florida. And he recently took action to deal with some of your issues there around algae blooms.
Yeah, correct. I mean, a lot of the algae blooms that we deal with in Florida are caused as a runoff from things that humans are doing, rather, whether it's urban runoff, agricultural runoff, just, you know, things that we do in our daily lives that leak into that, you know, into the atmosphere and into the ground waters. DeSantis is appointing more than $13 million to a bunch of new technologies to just be help with the preventative, you know, fight against some of these algae blooms before they become a problem. Because when they become a problem, they kill off fish. They smell. You can't even enjoy the beach or the waterways when these things become an issue. So it's really, he's pumping a lot of this money into just these new technologies in the Department of Environmental Protections that are like automated systems that help these little robots go out and collect and kill algae when they start the bloom, prevent some of these runoffs from going into our important waterways in the state. I mean, Florida is a sponge. So every part of our state, even this, what you think is solid ground, just below that, you're looking at really porous coral, swamplands, everything is revolved around the health of the water. So he has, in these 4 years, put almost $50 million towards just keeping our waterways healthy. And I don't think he gets enough credit for that too. I mean, I had talked about it once on the show a while back and somebody had tweeted at me like, oh, you don't pay attention. I'm like, you have to give people credit where credit is due. You know what I mean? And like one person can't solve all the problems that come with people interacting with the environment, but he does put a huge effort towards making sure that our waterways are happy and healthy so people can continue to enjoy them, because that's why people come to Florida.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. Not just an environmental issue, it also is an economic issue. It has to do with tourism revenue. I've been to the beaches in Florida when there was an algae bloom issue, and it's not pleasant. And you're kind of like, well, why am I here if I can't enjoy the beach? So credit to Ron DeSantis. And this is, like I said, a topic we're going to discuss on the Sunday show with, you know, you have, I think, politicians in Washington who have these big, lofty, oh, you know, the headline grabbing things about ending climate change or, you know, saving the world, where they let go some of the smaller things that could make an immediate difference. And it's just because those things don't, maybe they're not as sexy, they don't grab the headlines. So I think it's an interesting topic. Really quick before we let you go. So I talked about it. You spent a couple days in the ICU over Easter. Can to the extent you're willing, you had a little breathing issue?
I did. I have asthma. I did not have asthma my whole life. I actually developed asthma after I spent a weekend at Coachella, like about 10 years ago. I got caught in a dust storm and breathed in some mold spores, and that went untreated. And I wound up with pneumonia, and out of the pneumonia developed my asthma issues I deal with today. We don't know why it got so bad, but it did land me in the ICU for a couple of days. And I'm even, you can hear my voice, I'm still kind of trying to get my, you know, just everything kind of lined back up. But I am feeling better. I am taking my health seriously, and I am going to be looking into a whole bunch of different, like not only lifestyle changes, but just maybe some preventative medicines I'm going to have to start taking just so I don't wind back up in the hospital, because as lovely as they were and how great of, you know, care I received, it is not a place anybody wants to be on the weekend or weekdays. So
yeah, you gave us quite a scare. Nicole and I were freaked out, and I was trying to get a hold of your boyfriend, and I think he'd finally fallen asleep because it was such an ordeal in the morning. And I was like, nobody's answering. She's dead. I was like just panicking. So please don't die, because we really love you.
I know, I don't want to. I got a few years left on this planet. I know it. So.
All right, good. All right, thanks, Miranda. And that has been our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Meow. Thanks, Miranda. It's good just to have her back, you know? Tell us all about what's happening in the Sunshine State. Makes me want to move there, but I won't, because I'm committed. Also committed to the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. You see what I did there? Down 34 pounds as of this morning. 6 left to go. Nicole.
You weighed yourself?
I did.
You don't like to do that.
Well, yeah. But
I do that every morning.
No, I don't like to do it after vacation. That's different. But once the vacation has worn off, like, I got to get back on monitoring it. Anyway, I've lost now 34 pounds since I started the program at the beginning of November. And you can tell, obviously. And I've been really preaching the program. And I, in fact, just started doing commercials for Eastside Weight Loss Clinic on Cairo Radio as well. And I know that they're hearing from a lot of folks who are like, Brandy got that good of results in 2 months. Like, sign me up. And that was the nice thing is I was carrying around pandemic weight that I wasn't used to carrying around. So it actually came off pretty easily once I committed myself to it. There were no prepackaged meals. I didn't have to go into an office to get weighed in front of Dr. Coogan like all the time. I've only done that once. And it was the very beginning of the program when I started. And there's a lot of structure to the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan, which I kind of need. If I could do it myself, I would have done it myself. Clearly, I wasn't able to. So schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Make sure when you schedule it, because it'll come up, they'll have a little calendar. You can just select a little time to talk to Dr. Coogan. Make sure you tell them that you heard about them from me, Brandy Cruz, on the Undivided podcast. But yeah, check it out and let me know if you start the program, how it goes, because a lot of you have been checking in saying you're down 10 pounds, 20 pounds. Some of you are doing it with your significant other and you're both down. And we're just getting into our best beach body shape before summer and before my bachelorette party in San Diego. So I'm super excited about it. All right, let's get to some comments from the live stream. Susan said, I love listening to you, Brandy. In today's world, you are refreshing. Why don't you run for governor? I'm not kidding. Man, you know, if things get crazier, don't rule it out. We're getting borderline insane. But according to the internet, I'm just a right-wing nut. So I don't know if Washington's ready for a right-wing nut. Aaron Lang, super chat, super comment. Is it a super chat or a super comment? I want to use the lingo correctly.
I believe it's a super commenter.
I don't know. You're super. Aaron Lang says, don't forget the best label out there. If you speak up against this nonsense and get paid, you're a grifter. Maybe I'm just being conned, but you can keep taking my money. Thanks, Aaron. Yeah, grifter is one of the ones that I laugh at the most because the far left, if you're doing something and they don't agree with it, then you're a grifter. It's like, and I've said this before, this is the worst grift alive. If quitting a really cush job in TV to do this and work endless hours is a grift, then I guess I'm just the biggest grifter out there. YouTube super comment, Sergeant Pickles says, I love how your super comments for $9.99.
I know, right?
I love that. That's very specific. Mm-hmm. Thank you. With the passage of the assault weapons ban today, is there a way we can hold lawmakers accountable for wasting taxpayer money on unconstitutional laws other than just voting? Great show as always. You know, that's a good question. And it's something we talked about on the show before. They pass these things knowing that there is going to be a lengthy legal battle. That happened with the tax on capital gains. That's going to happen with this as soon as pen hits paper with the governor. And that costs the state money. Of course it costs the state money. And by cost the state money, it costs the taxpayers money. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should institute a law where if your bill that your name was signed, if you were a co-sponsor on a bill that doesn't survive a constitutional challenge, then you personally have to pay the expenses associated with it.
Maybe that order should change. Right?
So, yes.
It goes here, get this approved by judges, and then we'll work on getting it. Otherwise, it's just a big waste of time.
Republicans tried to do that, though. Republicans tried to attach an amendment that would say, you know, we're basically not going to fight against this bill, but it has to survive a constitutional challenge before it takes effect. And Democrats rejected it.
Of course.
And they made it an emergency, so it takes effect the second the governor signs it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that's common sense, right? We should have a law that says that the constitutionality of any bill that passes has to be verified before it becomes law. That's just common sense. So I
Absolutely.
Think that would be the best way to do it. But it's a good thought, Sergeant Pickles. They pass these bills knowing that it's just going to cost us a ton of money. Jill says, hello, Brandy and Nicole. Hello, Jill. I only have a half hour lunch, so I'll catch up later on the second half. Washington seems to be trying to out-liberal all the other states. It's like a competition to them. Yeah, Inslee doesn't like losing to Gavin Newsom.
It does seem like every time one makes the news, the other comes right behind him. Yep.
And then we just kind of forget about Oregon because whatever. It's just
like
less relevant. Todd says, once you turn 18 years old, you should be able to do literally anything you want as long as you don't infringe on others' rights. Until then, parental rights must remain strong. 100%. That's what I don't get. What's controversial about it is we set the age at 18 for a reason, and then you're an adult. There's all these things that you cannot do until you're 18. Mm-hmm. But we want to give kids the right to make certain medical decisions on their own. And I think that's really silly. And it's just totally, I don't think it's healthy for a child long term either to say, you think it's going to be better for their mental health if you let them disappear into the shelter system when they have a parent who wants to know where they are at home? That's just wild to me. Mm-hmm. Anthony says, I can't help but wonder if we as citizens of Washington have a representative government. Our legislature passes unconstitutional laws, knowing they are repugnant to both our state and federal constitutions before they do it. They pass laws that openly damage our economy, and now they feel our children should be kidnapped and mutilated. Now, I'm going to take an issue with that. I don't think it's actual mutilation. I think the only position on that I'm taking is that a parent ought to be involved. And let's not forget that they passed a law that states we will emulate California laws. They did that during the pandemic. I don't think it was a law they passed. It was like a pledge, right? To say it was like a pledge.
I think it was.
Mm-hmm. We are disenfranchised by what appears to be a government not of our making. Let's see. Becca says they're backpedaling with wordplay. If it is kidnapping, if they're knowingly and willingly keeping the knowledge of a child's location from the parents. And let's finally, we'll end with Matthew on Mayor's signing on to a letter to get the legislature to actually do something meaningful on the drug crisis. Matthew writes, notice Bruce Harrell not on that list of mayors. The city most affected with the drug crisis really isn't serious about tackling this problem. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Or they're focused on tackling it on their own because they don't want to. You know, they started this regional homelessness authority. Come on, that's a Seattle homelessness authority. And the South King County mayors on so many issues are just left in the shadow of Seattle with not a say in anything. That's why you've really started to see them band together and speak out and sort of a strength in numbers situation. Okay, thank you, as always, for your comments. Let's end with a closing sanity check that apparently Twitter really needs today. So I don't know if you heard, but Elon Musk set the deadline of today for legacy blue checks on Twitter to either pay for Twitter Blue or lose that precious, precious blue check of theirs. Now, I've had a blue check for several years, and that's because Twitter used to verify authentic news accounts so that people knew, like, hey, this is actually Brandy Cruz, and it's not one of the many accounts pretending to be Brandy Cruz. There was a guy one time who created an account and actually, like, put a bunch of straw on his head as a wig. And that was his profile picture. And he like had a parody account of me, which I also saw that he posted pictures that he had kids. And I was like, wow, I feel bad for those kids that their dad is spending time doing this. It's really quite sad. But anyway, there's a bunch of former blue checks on Twitter today, totally not having a meltdown over losing their blue check. They're totally okay with it. Halle Berry is one of them. She tweeted out this sort of gif of her. It's just a video of her saying, me joining you all tomorrow, unverified. And it's her just sort of waving, like, not a bother in the world. Mm-hmm. Valerie Bertinelli, who I like her show on the Food Network. I don't mind Valerie. Mm-hmm. She hosts a couple things. Twitter verified. They had sent out a tweet saying, tomorrow, 4:20, we're removing legacy verified check marks to remain verified on Twitter. Individuals can sign up for Twitter Blue here. And she says, bite me. Okay.
That's so fine. Triggered.
Snoqualmie Pass. There's a Twitter account specifically for Snoqualmie Pass. They said, no more blue check mark here starting tomorrow. Check, same great, okay-ish level of service. Which is that they're just trolling themselves? Yeah, I agree that your level of service is okay. Same information, education, and humor. 40 years combined communication experience between the two of us, making us credible. I don't know why that's like disappeared on there. But so anyway, there's just this, a bunch of people who did have a blue check who are virtue signaling about how they're not going to pay for Twitter Blue for $8 a month, and they're totally okay with losing their blue check. And I just, first of all, let me note that I am paying for Twitter Blue because it's $8 a month, and I get things from it. It helps me run my business. I get to post videos longer than 2 minutes and 20 seconds. I can post tweets that are longer than 240 characters, so I see value in it. Same way I try to encourage you guys to sign up for Undivided for $5 a month, because I hope you see the value in that. And I am not ashamed to admit that I'm paying Elon Musk $8 a month for a service that he is providing to me. So just for the people who are having a totally not having a meltdown today, but actually having a meltdown behind the scenes because their ego has been bruised, that they no longer have a blue check. I just want you to take a deep breath in, and I want to let you know that your value as a human being is not determined by whether you have a little blue check next to your name. And I promise you that everything will be just fine. And that has been your sanity check for today. And that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Remember, we do Sundays with subscribers every single Sunday, where we have an episode where we're totally laid back and we have a great in-depth conversation each week. This week, I don't know if you knew this, it's Earth Day on Saturday. And so we're going to have our friend Todd Myers in from the Washington Policy Center, who has just a great outlook on when it comes to environmental issues and things that our state government is doing that they think will work, these big lofty ideas that grab headlines versus smaller ideas that each and every one of us can do every single day that might actually make a difference. He's also going to be talking about a new curriculum around how kids are going to be taught environmental issues in the classroom that kind of freaks me out, because it's not focused on what's actually good for the environment, but more so pushing a social and political agenda. So please join us for Sundays with subscribers. If you have not become a subscriber already, you can do it for as little as $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And while there, you can figure out how to watch clips from the show, how to listen to the show, and also you can send Nicole and I news tips if you're so inclined. But most importantly, you can find out how to subscribe to the show on Patreon or Locals. We will see the rest of you back here on Monday. For subscribers, I will see you Sunday morning.